Today on Maine Calling, U.S. Representative Shelley Pingree. First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree is home in Maine, where last night she held the first of two town hall meetings in her district. Pingree faced a packed house at Camden Rockport High School, many there upset with the Trump administration and the lack of action from Congress in curbing the president's actions. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Pingree holds another meeting tonight in Westbrook, and today she is our guest on Maine Calling. We'll ask Congresswoman Pingree about the role of Congress during the Trump administration, as well as some of her specific priorities, including combating food waste and preserving SNAP benefits. And of course, she will take your questions about your government. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, our guest is U.S. Representative Shelley Pingree, who has been Congresswoman for Maine's 1st District since 2008. She serves on the House Appropriations Committee and Agriculture Committee and is here to discuss her top priorities and her reactions to what's happening in the nation's capital. Of course, this conversation is for you. What questions do you have for Congresswoman Shelley Pingree? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We anticipate many questions for Congresswoman Pingree. Some advice: do not wait until the end of the program to call. 1-800-399-3566. Congresswoman Pingree, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thanks so much. Happy to be with you.
Yeah, you know, we have seen a lot of criticism of Congress and congressional Democrats recently, people who are upset with the Trump administration saying, why don't they do something? I'm sure you're hearing the same thing. What do you say to that question?
Well, the first thing I try to do is give people a little sense of what we are doing, because I don't blame them for being frustrated. The speed with which we are being assaulted by the changes that this administration is making in our democracy, in the staffing of our agencies, in the funding to vital programs, it's got everyone's head spinning, and people are worried, concerned, afraid, and I share their feelings. I absolutely understand. And I want people to understand that myself and my colleagues, we feel like we are on the job 24 hours a day. Every time we hear about a staffing cut, a funding cut, a fight in the courts, we're doing everything we possibly can to react, to fight back. I don't like to use the excuse that we're in the minority, but it's sometimes hard for people to understand that when you are in the minority, it's harder to bring legislation to the floor. It's harder to sponsor committee hearings on the topics that you care about. The Republicans control the House of Representatives, but we are trying to use every tool to get around them. Sometimes that's a discharge petition of a piece of legislation. Sometimes it's trying to attract public attention, literally to shame them about the kinds of cuts they're making to things like veteran services or education or farmers. We're also working on litigation. We're signing on to amicus briefs. We have over 160 pieces of litigation going on right now, some of it with attorney generals, some of it with labor unions or nonprofit organizations. Again, it can be a little confusing for people, but the House of Representatives can file suit against the president, but only with the authority of the Speaker of the House. So Speaker Johnson doesn't agree with us on what we think about the president's actions. So we have to find other venues or other ways to go about doing it. But we feed that information to attorney generals, other groups, work with them very closely on the spending cuts. And we're, you know, trying to fight back in every possible way. Of those 160 lawsuits, we've had about 50 to 60 injunctions. So we are winning on fronts, but I don't want to underestimate the challenges that we are facing today. They're enormous. And we are anxious to have the public working with us because it makes a big difference when you have public voices out there, whether it's a protest or calling other members of Congress, or just making sure your friends and neighbors know exactly what's going on out there.
You serve on the House Appropriations Committee. President Trump is clawing back funds that have already been appropriated. What power does the Appropriations Committee have to stop that?
Yeah, well, the president is showing absolutely no concern or respect for the separation of powers. We often describe that Congress has the power of the purse. We appropriate those funds, and we did so in the last year's budget. And as you're explaining to people, many of those funds have been taken back by the president, or he stopped the funding stream. And as I said, that could be, a grant that a farmer received. It could be to our school lunch program. It could be veterans services, closing down offices of Social Security, and each and every one, we are trying to raise attention to it, make sure that people know what is being cut and what he's doing. We are filing lawsuits and saying to the courts, look, it is illegal for the president to stop this funding. And in most cases, the courts rule in our favor. But given the volume of what's going on right now, really through Elon Musk and the Doge, first off, there's no transparency. It's chaotic. It isn't really done with any rhyme or reason, even though they describe it as waste, fraud, and abuse. These are vital staff positions in all of our agencies. These are vital funds that were promised and contracted to everybody from museums, libraries, schools, individual citizens. It's just such a long list, but we are fighting on every possible front. Now, the Appropriations Committee will start our process again and have started some hearings. So I've been talking to and working with my Republican colleagues, trying to get hearings set up and hoping that in the 2026 budget, we will have the opportunity to have a little more influence. I don't want to give people any false hope, but we are certainly not ceding our power. We're just fighting back to get it back from the president every day.
When you say we're certainly not ceding our power and that you've been speaking with your Republican colleagues, would they agree with you? Do they feel as though that this is a case of them ceding their power?
Very good question, and I can't speak for my Republican colleagues. I guess the way I would say it is, certainly with the ones that I work with, I don't let them forget every day the cuts that are being made and our responsibility. I'm the ranking member on the Interior and Environment Subcommittee, and I talk to the chair almost every day, trying to strategize about some of the funding cuts that we're facing. And I guess I can say that he agrees with me that we should not see these funding cuts in the next budget. And I can't say that they're all willing to fight publicly and openly. And that is part of our problem. But certainly, we're not letting them off the hook on any of that. And we'll have a much more sort of public debate about it once the president presents the budget to Congress. And, we can talk about where they've zeroed out accounts, what agencies they're not funding at all, what they're doing to things like the Department of Education, the Environmental Protection Agency. Right now, they haven't put anything on paper. They have a tendency to do this all in the dark of the night through DOGE. And, we are I know that it sounds a little insignificant, but we are, focusing a lot of our efforts on trying to make sure that this next budget cycle for 2026 has to see the light of day, and our Republican colleagues have to come, and face up to what is being cut or what agencies have been completely dissolved in the dark of the night.
Congresswoman Pingree, I want to ask you sort of a big question, and that is, what is your philosophy or your strategy, if you will, about navigating this moment? You are opposed to most, if not all, of the president's agenda, yet you represent the people of Maine and our schools, farms, fisheries, industries. Do you talk with the administration? Do you negotiate, or do you just fight?
I think a good representative has to do a little bit of both. We have to use every tool in our toolbox. And look, if as I said, every few days there's a cut. There's a cut to, you know, agricultural programs. There's a cut to the school lunch program. There was a cut last week to the administration of LIHEAP. We put in phone calls to the executive branch. We, you know, try to set up appointments with people who work at the agencies. We use every tool we've got. We talk to our Republican colleagues. I literally, and when we're on the floor of the House of Representatives, I literally go over to the chair of the Agriculture Committee every day with a list of cuts that are impacting the farmers in Maine. And I say, hey, they keep telling us that they're going to replace the staff here back at the NRCS offices, but my understanding is they're not there yet. Can you check on it for me? You know, we've had a few hearings, and when anyone from the administration comes to the hearing, I say, here are the exact numbers of people who, you know, had a contract with the USDA, but whose funding is blocked, you know. So I try as hard as I can to work with them, but I'm not going to sugarcoat any of this. As far as I'm concerned, every action of DOGE and the president is illegal and unconstitutional. They don't have the power of the purse. They have no right to take this money back from the state of Maine or any other state. And they're not doing anything using the process that, you know, is both legal and constitutional.
I have to ask you this. Are there any issues on which you agree with President Trump?
You know, first off, I think I should just step back and say the idea of looking for waste, fraud, and abuse, looking for efficiencies in government, downsizing our spending, reducing our debt and deficit, they're all very good ideas. And if Elon Musk and the DOGE was coming to our Appropriations Committee and saying, look at all the things that we think are wasteful spending and where the places where we could reduce staff or combine some departments, I would be very enthusiastic. It's not being done that way. And these are arbitrary cuts, often done by using AI and keywords to just get rid of a bunch of people or positions or funding streams, or firing all the probationary workers in departments where they're vital, like firefighters or new appointees at the Veterans Administration. So the basic sense of doing that, I agree. Many of the things that the president ran on, reducing prices, making the cost of living lower. I mean, the president talks about all kinds of things like making childcare more affordable or getting people in housing or homeless people off the streets. These are absolutely things we agree on. We just don't see a president who that's what he's doing. He's reducing, you know, he's gotten rid of homeless services. He's gotten rid of many of the services to veterans. You know, he's going about it in a whole different way and not doing the things that he's doing. But, you know, each cabinet secretary, we're all doing our best to get to know them better. You know, there's a variety of things at the Department of Interior that the Secretary of Interior did when he was in North Dakota working with tribal communities. Seemed like a good idea. You got RFK, who's looking at making America healthier and reducing, you know, food additives in our diet and ultra-processed foods, supporting regenerative agriculture. Great. I mean, I'm all in on all kinds of things that people have suggested, but that is not what this administration is actually doing or focusing on.
You held one town hall meeting last night. You're holding another tonight. As you reflect on last night's meeting, what have you come away with?
Many of the things that we were very aware of based on the, you know, calls and emails that our office is getting, the people are extremely concerned. They're angry with many of the actions that the president is taking. They're worried about many of the fundamentals of democracy, the basic principles of law. They're worried about our standing in the world and diplomatic relationships. And they're just worried about basic things like Social Security and the future of Medicaid, the Department of Education, will there be special education for their kids going into the future? So, you know, it's a long list of things that people are worried about. I would say, you know, overall, I'm extremely impressed with how much people are paying attention to what's going on, how knowledgeable they are about the stories that are coming up, you know, in the news or that they're reading on social media, how willing they are. The number one question is always, what should we do? How do we do more? What's most effective? And in many ways, in spite of all this discouraging behavior on behalf of this administration, that is a very reaffirming thing about our democracy. that people on a Sunday afternoon would fill up a room, you know, just to ask some questions or give their opinion. And not everybody was coming to, you know, say, rah, rah. You know, some of them didn't agree with me on things. People were showing up to say where we have differences of opinion. And that is just really reassuring. And honestly, you know, for all that we need to be doing at the congressional level, we need active citizens, too, who are using their voices and making themselves heard. And so that was very encouraging to me.
We're speaking, of course, with Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. I'm sure you recognize her voice. We do need to go to a break. When we come back, Congresswoman Pingree, I want to ask you about the Food Recovery Caucus, and we will take your questions. Our boards are full. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, my guest, Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, U.S. Representative for Maine's 1st Congressional District. We invite you to join the conversation. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Recently, I believe it was just last week, you and some others launched something called the Food Recovery Caucus. What are its goals?
That's something actually we've been working on for a while. And I suppose in the middle of all these other big picture questions we're asking ourselves about the Supreme Court and the judicial system, it's good to be launching bills as we do every year on a variety of issues. And one of the reasons we have a Food Recovery Caucus, or really are focusing on the issue of food waste, is because something like 30% of the food in our country is wasted. And that happens through a whole variety of ways, on-farm waste, transportation at the retail level, and people's home refrigerators. And this is at the same time where people are going hungry. We're not getting food to the right places, where we have growing costs of food. And it also presents an environmental challenge when it ends up in a landfill. So we've worked on legislation for a while that tries to address it every step of the way. From, you know, how not to waste so much food, transporting it around the country and using more local sources for food, things like food date labeling and the extreme confusion people have about should they throw a product away or is it still good to eat, and getting some uniformity there. And then also at the other end, supporting biodigesters or composting systems in municipal communities so that we don't spend so much money wasting food, and it also doesn't turn into methane and create just more problems with climate change. So I have Republican co-sponsors on this. I work with the Senate on it too. And again, it's always good to be reminded every day when you go to work that there are those things that you do that, you know, we have general agreement on. Everybody's grandmother told them not to waste food, and we know that's a good thing to do. So as a member of the Agriculture Committee, this is one of many, many issues that we work on, but it's been an important part of Farm Bill efforts, and also if and when we get to an appropriations bill, we'll be trying to fund some of the efforts around it this year.
We'll go to Caitlin calling from Portland. Hi, Caitlin. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Caitlin, am I with you?
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, I'm very sorry. Thank you, Shelley Pingree. I'm sorry I'm in the middle of my workday, but I just want to call in really quickly. First of all, to say thank you for being the front lines for us. You mentioned that people are calling and asking what we can do. Can you tell us clearly what we can do? Because I feel very desperate every day that I want to do something and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, thank you for your question. And I think one thing that I've tried to emphasize to people is that everything that they're doing makes a difference. You know, every email, letter, call that we get helps us to understand what people are concerned about and what they're worried about. And we keep account of them. We try to reply to everybody, but also connecting with the rest of the delegation. We take different votes in the House and the Senate. And we have different opinions. So contacting our congressional delegation is extremely important. Now more than ever. People who show up for protests, whether it was on April 5th or the people who are on their, you know, street corners on Saturday afternoons, the people who are standing outside of Social Security offices because they want people to know that they're worried, make a difference. And you might just feel like, oh, wow, it's just me and two others. Does anybody really care? But, you know, 10 people drive by you and say, Oh, wow. I should pay more attention. Is something going on with Social Security? Is there something going on with the USDA? Or maybe I should show up and protest outside of something or when they hear about it. Letting your friends and neighbors know what you're learning about, because I think there are many, many people who may have voted for the president with the hopes that he would bring down prices or that they would feel like the border was secure or something was safer in their lives, but in fact haven't heard that he is attempting through his, you know, one big beautiful bill and tax cuts for billionaires to cut Medicaid, which will have a huge impact on seniors in nursing homes, or to cut SNAP benefits, which takes food away from children and families. So I think the more we are all talking about this and thinking about the things that matter to us, the closer we get to sort of righting the ship and balancing some of these things that are so far out of balance right now.
Caitlin, thanks for your call. Let's see, we'll go to Kevin, who's calling from Newcastle. Hi, Kevin, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm a retired Merchant Marine officer, and my comments and questions regard the appalling detentions of individuals taking place on our streets. The first question that I have is, how many do you know of the Venezuelans deported to El Salvador, how many of them were bused or flown to their locations that they were detained at by Texas Governor Greg Abbott prior to this administration taking office? And second, this current administration said they were going to deport up to 1 million individuals per month. And the wording on it might sound facetious, but I wonder how it is that they are doing in relation to that quota that they set up, because if they don't match it, do they then make up excuses to detain other people unjustly?
Kevin, I'm going to let Congresswoman Pingree answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for your question. Thank you for your service as a Merchant Marine officer. We have so many people who do that in Maine and are so grateful to the work you do. And the question about the Venezuelans being detained in a prison in El Salvador, the question about that's come up about the father from Maryland who's also in that prison, and there is a current court case going on back and forth with this administration that appears to refuse to bring him home, has caused just deep, deep concern for people. This administration's approach to immigration seems to be unlawful, but also is very hard to sort out. So I think we're all pushing back on a variety of fronts there, and are grateful that some of the court decisions have shed more light on, you know, who can legally be deported from this country and what is the administration's responsibility to bring them home when they make mistakes. I don't know the answer to your question about whether Greg Abbott moved the Venezuelans or. But I think it's a worthy question, and I'll certainly see if I can find out more about it. But I do think that, you know, based on initial analysis, many of those Venezuelans were picked up because they had a tattoo, not because they had a criminal record. And while there's virtually unanimous agreement that people with criminal records, you know, should be removed from the country, particularly ones that are, you know, felony crimes, this has gone far beyond that. And the White House does have big quotas. They don't seem to be meeting them yet, but they're asking for a huge infusion of financial support in the big, beautiful bill that the president is working on. And if they're able to receive that, they may ramp up their efforts. I think the other thing that people are really worried about is what is grounds for removal from this country, and legal green card holders, others who have just stated opinions that are different from this administration are being removed. And I think that really goes to the core of our free speech rights and the fundamentals of democracy. And we're all very worried about that and certainly fighting back.
Kevin, thank you for your call. We'll move down to Kittery. And Kevin, go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go right ahead.
Hi, Ms. Pingree. My question is, I'm 65 now. I'll be 66 November. I was thinking of retiring. Social Security office near me in Portsmouth. New Hampshire is understaffed before Doge got in there and started making a bunch of cuts. So you had to make an appointment to go in and sit down and talk to anybody, and sometimes you'd wait sitting in a chair there with your number picked for 3 hours waiting to see somebody. Now, with them making even more cuts, and did they make cuts to the point where some people are going to miss out or going to lose out on Social Security? That's my question, number one. Number two, when they just got done messing around with the stock market with these tariffs, and President Trump came on the air and said, this is a good time to buy, did he just send a message to all of his cronies that, you know, we're gonna take back some of the tariffs and it's a good time for you to buy stocks? That's my two questions for you. Thank you.
Thanks. Those are excellent questions. As to the second one, I think he raised an enormous amount of concern that when he said to people, this is a good time to buy, and then only hours later remove the tariffs, he was giving a signal to people, or perhaps telling them outright. And there was a videotape of him, you know, proudly just meeting with people in the White House who had made millions of dollars because of that bump. I think people are deeply worried about what the tariffs are doing to the market, to the bond market, to the financial stability of our country, to the potential of a future recession. And even if you are a supporter of tariffs or see the value of selective tariffs, which I understand there are good times to place a tariff on something, the chaotic nature, the on-again, off-again use of them, the way it has set us up against our allies like Canada and the impact that it's having is just very dangerous to the economy of this country. And I am deeply, deeply worried about Social Security. I find it hard to believe that any president of the United States would undermine the most important retirement system in our country that impacts so many Mainers and so many people around the country, but the facts are there. There are tens of people from DOGE working within the Social Security Administration, and we've had multiple briefings about the number of staff that's been cut, the customer service that has gone downhill, the danger with this system, given that it's very old and it uses old technology. And believe me, if Elon Musk wanted to come in and say, I'm going to upgrade the technology and I'm going to make this system work more efficiently, I would be the first one to raise my hand and start clapping, because there's a lot of old computer systems in the government today that we have not been willing to invest to upgrade. But it seems to me what they're doing is much more devious. It has to do with destroying customer service, making it difficult for people to work with the Social Security Administration, so that at some point, not too far down the road, they can say, hey, it doesn't work that well. Why don't we turn it over to our friends on Wall Street? We'll privatize Social Security, or maybe even better, we'll take the $2.7 trillion in the trust fund and we'll use that to help fund some of our tax cuts that we have to fund. Now, I know that sounds a little bit dark, but I just think we all have to be very aware that this is an unprecedented destruction of customer service, of the fundamentals of how this works. And it is very worrisome, because there appears to be a lack of understanding in the administration, as you heard, when some of them say, it's fine if the checks come late, you know, people will be fine. We all know that for many people, if your check is a day late, you can't make rent, you can't put food on the table, you can't pay for your prescription drugs. And certainly, when checks start to come late, we're all going to be extremely worried. But we all have a focus on it. We are doing everything we can to fight back. But we want people to know this is your Social Security. It's your money. And we need you protesting and being just as angry as we are.
And it sounds like Kevin was looking for some very practical advice. He's 65. Oh. Should he retire?
I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me of that. So the advice that we are giving to everybody is get into the system right away. Make sure you download all of your employment data. Make sure that you keep hard copies of that should there be any problems with the system. It's still a financial decision to make. As you know, you're sometimes financially better off to start collecting at 70 or start collecting over 65, but that's an individual's decision you have to make. I will say that our office in Portland does a great job helping people with their Social Security benefits. So if you do run into problems or you can't get through or you have any questions, you are very welcome to call our office and we're happy to help you.
An email here from Bruce. We understand that many Republicans, away from cameras and microphones, have the proper horrified reaction to how insane Trumpster's effect is. Isn't there any way to get them to be Republicans again and walk away from the Trumpsters? He goes on, but Congresswoman Pingree, are you hearing that? You know, we read about that, that there are people in private who are upset. Are you hearing these discussions behind closed doors? And if so, what do you think it will take?
I mean, absolutely. Having been in Congress for many years and worked with a lot of Republicans, many who I consider my friends, I talk to them about it often. And I feel, you know, I may look at this differently. I feel that many of them are yet unwilling to speak up. They're worried that they'll have a primary. They're worried that they will be, you know, pushback. Actually, I can't even speak for them. I don't know what they're worried about, but I know that they're not. But I also know that it only takes about three or four votes in the House of Representatives to turn a piece of legislation around. And I do believe one of the reasons it's so important to talk about what's going on to make sure people are well informed is because my Republican colleagues hear that too. They're hearing this same thing from their constituents that I am from mine. You know, we don't have all red districts and all blue districts. We have Americans who get just as upset about Social Security or not getting their agricultural payments or their school losing funding. They care just so much about that in Idaho and Kentucky as they do, you know, in Maine and Massachusetts. And so the fact that this conversation is going on is eventually going to get through to them. And I think things like the destruction of the Social Security system, the destruction of our relationship around the world, many of them are extremely upset with the administration for cozying up to Putin instead of taking on Ukraine. And we do talk about it to them all the time. I mean, I don't let them off the hook. I remind them of this. And there are times when we've been in, you know, smaller dinners, you know, a variety of situations where they talk about it and they say they don't like this. I was with a colleague the other night, Republican, and he said, you know, I think our president got elected on closing the border and, you know, bringing down prices, and he shouldn't be, you know, talking about taking over Greenland and Panama. That's destroying our relationships around the world or undoing NATO. So I know that there are many of them who believe this. I don't know when the tipping point will be, but I do know politics is unpredictable. And the more they're hearing in their districts, just like we are here in the state of Maine, the more it is getting through to them. And eventually, I think we will get them on some of these bigger votes, particularly when the president attempts to cut Medicaid and SNAP benefits and lower taxes for the wealthiest in our country.
Later in Bruce's email, he asked, please discuss how impossible it will be for Donald Trump to get a run for the third term.
I don't think anyone actually believes that he can run for a third term, but let's not underestimate that there were many things we thought he would never do, he couldn't do, that he wouldn't be so bold as to defy the courts or defy Congress. So I think we all have to stay on guard. I also think it's part of why, you know, they're doing everything they can to make it difficult for people to vote. They would love to suppress the vote and make it easier for him to win. But, you know, believe me, that's one I will lie down in front of the bulldozer for. I don't think we can allow him to have a third term.
We are speaking with First District Representative Shelley Pingree. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can get an email in, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, our guest is Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. She represents Maine's 1st Congressional District. You can share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. You could try to get through on the phones, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Paul now, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for being on the show, Representative Pingree. It's nice to see these hands-off protests, and glad that you're participating. And one thing I'd like to see is Congress draw a line and support our international students, some of whom have been kidnapped by masked ICE agents and detained simply for exercising their guaranteed political opinion about what's happening in Gaza. I'd also like to see a red line drawn, which is long overdue, to say hands off Gaza and the West Bank. Netanyahu just the other day said the realization of the Trump plan, meaning turning Gaza into a vacation land, is the goal. And we're not hiding this. The deputy parliament speaker in the Knesset.
Paul, I'm going to let the congresswoman respond because we have so many questions coming in. Go ahead, Congresswoman Pingree.
Yeah, thank you. And I wholeheartedly agree with you on this one. I think, you know, we all breathed a sigh of relief, I guess, for the moment when there was a ceasefire. But as soon as, you know, Donald Trump was back in office and Netanyahu went back to war, it's been worse than ever, both getting humanitarian aid in there and the destruction of Gaza. I agree with you. I don't think Netanyahu has any desire to go ahead with a two-state solution. I think he would like to have removal of people. And the video that the president did that I guess was sort of meant to be in jest was in the worst possible taste, unbelievably unthinkable, this idea that you would move the Palestinians out of Gaza and create a resort, you know, for him to make money. Anyway, yeah, it's deeply concerning. And just as concerning, as you mentioned, is the idea that civil protest, dissent, that the president is trying to use his own political views to try to shut down free speech on campuses, to try to deport students who are here legally with green cards and student visas, only for having an opinion that goes against his, to say, you know, the war should come to an end, or that there should be more humanitarian aid, that America shouldn't be funding the weapons going into the war, all very legitimate free speech. It's chilling, I think. And it is just chilling. And so we are fighting back against that. Absolutely.
Paul, thanks for your call. We'll go to an email here from Charlie. I'm from Cushing. I'm a millennial and a veteran. And I can't help feel that my future in this country looks bleaker than ever. I feel like I'll never be able to retire, that Social Security will be non-existent by the time I could begin drawing benefits, and that the VA will be completely hollowed out and the rule of law will continue to become more of a paper tiger than it already seems to be. In yesterday's town hall in Camden, A.G. Fry used the analogy that it takes one man to set a building on fire, but several folks to put the fire out. Unfortunately, that leaves us with burnt rubble, and it sure seems like there'll be nothing left for my generation and younger generations to rebuild with. What legislation or other actions will you take to help shore up the long-term future of this country for people my age and younger?
Yeah, thanks for your question, and I really appreciate you speaking out. I think now is more important than ever that young people realize that their future is at stake, whether it's the future of the planet due to climate change, or the future of our financial stability, how the world views us, our diplomatic relations around the world, and keeping out of World War III on every single front. You're right. And just on the basic fronts of young people trying to make ends meet, of being able to have affordable housing or pay for childcare or plan for a future where they'll have financial security. It's a very difficult time, and we need young people to speak out about their future. We are fighting on each and every one of those fronts. That's really what this battle is about. And I can't say that it's just more important now than ever that we all realize that we're in this together. And if we want to have a country that's going to be there for our children and our grandchildren, we can't take a day off from the fight. You asked me about specific legislation. I mean, we are working on legislation. For instance, before they started to destroy the Social Security system, we had a plan to shore up the trust fund, to make sure that there wasn't a cap on it, to make sure that, you know, people of means were paying their fair share, so that we were putting enough in the trust fund so there was financial stability. Now we're just worrying about whether or not the phones are going to work and they're going to, you know, sneak off with the money or give it to Wall Street. So the problem is even more dire. But it doesn't mean we're going to stop fighting. And it really is important that everybody's voice is in there and not saying like, I can't do anything about it, so I'm not going to bother. Absolutely. Everyone has to be in the fight.
We'll go to Maggie, who's calling from York Beach. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for my call. My question to Shelley is, how much discussion do you have regarding all of these issues with both of our senators from Maine. Is Susan Collins still in lockstep with Trump, or are they looking, you know, to work towards issues in Maine like you are? I'm just curious where they're at.
Yeah, thanks for your question. As you can imagine, in a four-person delegation, we don't all agree with each other all the time. But I will say that compared to a lot of other states, this delegation spends a lot of time talking to each other, and particularly things that are of great interest to Maine, funding cuts that have impacted our state directly, whether it's the Department of Agriculture, the Maine Sea Grant Program, the Department of Education. We both discuss them. We text them to each other. I know that Senator Collins, you know, has made many calls to the administration about funding cuts that we've been attempting to get reinstated, and that we've often been able to be successful about. So I would say this is a delegation. And again, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sugarcoat it. We don't always agree on everything. And there are times when, you know, I see things differently. But I would say everyone in our delegation is distressed about many of the things that are going on and working hard to stop them. We all have a different role to play. And, you know, there are times when the Senator Collins agrees with the president way more than I do. But it doesn't mean there aren't times when she's very helpful to all of us as well.
And I do want to notice that Senator King will be our guest on Maine Calling on Friday. So letting you know that, Maggie. An email here from Rachel. In terms of back office operations, how is this all getting done? I mean, cutting funding is not just a bounce check.
I guess that's a question about back office operations in the executive branch. If I'm understanding the question right, I will say that is one of the most terrifying things about what's going on right now, because this is done by the DOGE, and even many of my colleagues on the Republican side, even many of my colleagues on the Appropriations Committee on the Republican side don't get advance notice, don't have any idea what's going on until it's happened. It is chaotic and secretive. And we often don't know that the funding is blocked until we hear from someone who was attempting to access the funding for a housing project or the LIHEAP money or any number of things. And suddenly the computer portal they're used to going to is blocked and isn't working. Or we hear about the staffing cuts from people who work on the staff and suddenly get notices that you have to clear out your desk in 3 hours and your computer will be shut down. So it is... has a somewhat sinister feel to it, and it also creates a lot of chaos. We, for instance, with the LIHEAP program that was recently in danger, that's the funding that goes to help, you know, people who are having trouble paying their heating bill. They got rid of all the staff who administer the program. It's very complicated. It's complicated to qualify for, and it's complicated to administer to all the different states that get it. Well, all of a sudden there were no staff in the main office to do it anymore, which is part of the DOGE, you know, 10% across the board cuts or 20% across the board cuts. So they could say, well, the money's still there, but you can't get it. And they're doing massive staffing cuts like that with Meals on Wheels or the Head Start program. So we don't sometimes know from day to day where a system will fall apart. But this is done by people who don't like government, who would love to see everything privatized, who are trying to take back as much money as they possibly can to put towards their interests and needs, like tax cuts for the wealthiest or more border patrol, or even in the case of the arts and humanities, we've had huge cuts to the NEH here in Maine, the National Endowment for the Humanities. Projects were cut midstream. The president wants to put that to his own ideas of what patriotic arts programs should be, like taking over the Kennedy Center. So in many ways, they're just trying to divert the funds somewhere else. And we almost have to use forensic accounting to find out what they're doing with the money and how to get it back.
We'll go to an email from Albert. I suspect a lot of this episode is going to be about bashing Trump. I'm okay with that. But let's acknowledge he did win an election, and a lot of Mainers voted for him. He had 45 or 46% of the vote here. What does concern me is, one, making sure Trump follows the courts, making sure citizens get due process. Two, on foreign policy, no war with Iran. And three, what I want, though, the same as before Trump, is attention paid to affordable housing policy. This is the main driver of the cost of living increase. This is a huge problem in Maine and across the country. Housing goes right to survival. And Congresswoman Pingree, as I'm sure you know, Maine Calling is in the second year of doing a whole series on the housing crisis in Maine. Can people expect anything out of Washington to help?
Well, first off, I mean, the caller, absolutely, I acknowledge that Donald Trump won. And I always go into a new administration thinking, look, let's find the areas of agreement. Anything we can do where we might agree on some of the same things. And Donald Trump said he would bring down the cost of living. You know, there were a variety of things that it looked like we were going to be able to work on. And housing policy, you know, for me and for most Mainers, is one of our number one concerns. I'm deeply distressed that they are cutting funding at Housing and Urban Development, which is where we get a lot of funds to help with affordable housing. They cut a big fund the other day that was going to energy efficiency in some of our low-cost housing in Maine to make it sustainable and allow our housing authorities to continue to use it. So I'm afraid we're going in the opposite direction. I also agree with the caller. I do not want to go to war with Iran. I don't think we should be, you know, Donald Trump told us he could end the war in Gaza. He could end the war in Ukraine in a day. It's not been going that way. And, you know, I would cheer and applaud him if either of those wars were over or he could use his art of the deal skills, you know, to make things better around the world. But as far as I can tell from talking to international diplomats and you know, hearing what we're hearing from people around the world, we've only angered our allies. We've, you know, talked about getting out of NATO and many of our important vital tools that we have to keep peace in the world, and we're going in the wrong direction. I do believe many people voted for Donald Trump because they heard some of those same messages. He was going to lower your cost of living, and he was going to make the country feel safe. And I think he's raising concerns with people that he's not as good for the economy as he thought. But look, if he can turn anything around, I promise I will cheer. I will cheer for anything good that happens.
We'll go to Jerry calling from Kingston. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's good morning. My son serves in the Navy and he's in the Red Sea carrying out operations as we speak. I was just wondering, is anybody going to help be held accountable for Signalgate? Thank you.
Jerry, can you follow up and tell us what you mean by Signalgate?
That was when the email to the reporter was added to the email of the software Signal.
Yep. I know what you mean. And I think you said you served in the Navy. If I got that right, thank
his
you
son.
For your service. Oh, his son. Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you for your son's service. Well, your son would know what a breach of protocol that was. And, you know, we know as members of Congress, we cannot have Signal. Signal is like a messaging app that has some protections, but is not fully secure. As members of Congress, if you have an official phone, you're not allowed to use Signal. You're certainly not allowed to use it in any of our secure rooms or to get any secure information, top secret information, or anything else. So the very idea that our top brass in intelligence and in the military and Secretary of Defense were using that and then tossed it off so cavalierly, or the White House dismissed that, I think was deeply unsettling, particularly for those people who have spent their lifetime in the military, for military generals, for people who work in intelligence. The level of information, I mean, forget that the reporter was on there, and that's how we know all this. You know, it's now been clear that this is used frequently. And some of the reasons it's used is to avoid the records laws that allow, that require everybody who serves in federal government to keep records of what they do so that they're safe for posterity, so that they're, you know, years later released and we can see what history reveals. But the level of, I guess, incompetence, the cavalier nature of how that was treated, and the fact that it was just brushed off, and you know, a day later we're talking about tariffs instead of should some of these people be fired or resigned, is how this government is being run, and it doesn't give people confidence in the security of our country or the competence of the people running it.
Jerry, thanks for your question. And I apologize to all of you who did not get your questions through. We're out of time. Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, we have many emails coming in thanking you for the work that you're doing right now. So I do want to acknowledge that and all of those people who took the time to write an email. Congresswoman Shelley Pingree represents Maine's 1st District.
Thank you.
Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we continue our year-long series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. Our focus tomorrow is students with disabilities. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.